The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
2 years on from the attacks of October the 7th, could the end of the brutal conflict it sparked be finally in sight? President Donald Trump believes so, saying yesterday there's a possibility that we could have peace in the Middle East. The United States, Turkey and Qatar will be joining the peace efforts in Egypt today, with the United States sending special envoy Steve Witkoff and Trump's own son-in-law Jared Kushner along for the talks. Now, both of those are specialists in real estate and money rather than in diplomacy, but there you are. Joining us now to talk about all of this, Paul Rogers, Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, they are close to Donald Trump, which is the reason they are being sent, I presume. But it looks like many different parties are coming to this particular negotiating session with what in mind? Turkey, Qatar, the United States, Israel, Hamas?
Well, I think that in reverse order, so to speak, Hamas would like to see an end to this, but they are deeply mistrustful of what Israel will do. And so while there's certainly been progress, I think they are really holding back in terms of making final agreements. Of all the others, they have different motives. Obviously, states such as Qatar and Turkey, because they have the huge regional interests. Israel, because it is determined under the Netanyahu government to maintain its security by whatever measures are necessary. And the United States, well, one isn't quite sure, I'm afraid, with Trump, because it is so variable. But for the moment, he seems to want a peace deal. He may have some sort of illusion that because the Nobel Peace Prize will be announced in the next few days, if he gets a deal, he'll get the prize, which is, I don't think it will happen, let's put it that way. But I think the real issue here, and the one which is going to cause the most difficulty, is whether the Israelis will actually withdraw to the level that Hamas regards as essential. And that is sort of to withdraw from the great majority of the Gaza area. And Netanyahu has made it clear, has stated very clearly that Israel would not do that, that Israel will maintain a military presence over most, is the word used, most of Gaza. And if that can be breached, then I think we would be in pretty good new territory. Mm. But I'm not at all sure that will be possible.
Hamas themselves, a Palestinian spokesperson was saying, I suppose on behalf of Hamas, that the five remaining issues, which are really at the heart of the 20-point plan, the permanent ceasefire, the exchange of the hostages and the prisoner swap, the withdrawal of the Israeli forces from Gaza, which you've mentioned, arrangements for humanitarian aid deliveries, and then post-war governance of the territory. I mean, some of these you can see, the hostage swap, that could be okay. A permanent ceasefire could be difficult. Withdrawal of Israeli forces could be very difficult. Humanitarian aid deliveries, that happened before during an extended ceasefire, so that could happen again. But post-war governance of the territory, another. So three out of the five are really thorny.
I think this is the problem. And I mean, people want progress. They want to see at least a temporary ceasefire, anything to stop what is going on at the moment, because there's a lot of killing going on day by day. And as a result of that, I think there's a sort of a desire to get somewhere, even if it's not very far. But as far as Hamas is concerned, it has to have guarantees. And the principal guarantees are really of security in Gaza without major Israeli support involvement. And I think the difficulty that Netanyahu faces, of course, is that as far as members of his coalition are concerned, it is really quite impossible for Israel just to withdraw from Gaza, even if there is some sort of international stabilization force, because they do not believe that Hamas has been beaten. And this is what one has to remember. Hamas is probably a shadow of its former self, but in terms of the number of people prepared to support it and active in supporting it, it's probably as much as it's ever been. I mean, one has to remember that right at the end of the Biden administration, you actually had senior officials saying that Hamas was actually as strong as it was at the start of the war. And that has not diminished, I think. And this is where, in a sense, Netanyahu has to convince his own government and, in fact, most Israelis that he has actually succeeded in defeating Hamas irreversibly. And he has not done that.
Now, the other parties, I mean, the Turkish intelligence chief, what's that about?
Well, Turkey has maintained a sort of a presence in different ways throughout the region. It has a very large intelligence service. Why exactly this is going on? It may well be that Turkey is prepared to offer some sort of facility to aid the whole process. And if you're doing that, then it is not so much your diplomats that you want to get talking. You want to get your intelligence people understanding what is going on. That's the best guess, but I'm not sure anybody outside of Turkey is really clear about what's going on there.
Now, the question of how helpful the presence of Jared Kushner would be, his family are very close to Netanyahu. He allegedly alienated himself totally from Palestinian Authority in the first Trump administration. So, is he there really with a deal in mind? Is it all about real estate or has he some other agenda?
It may well be about real estate. I mean, I think one has to accept that in terms of the American involvement, Kushner and Witkoff, they're coming to it from a very pro-Israeli angle, really strongly so. And this is why, in some ways, the talks themselves are unbalanced in that sense. And one also has to remember that the Qataris are really pretty cautious now because of the way in which Netanyahu's people, the Israeli Defense Forces, actually tried to assassinate all the people on the Hamas side who were in Qatar, who would have been involved in the mediation. In other words, kill the mediators. They only did that, what, about 6 weeks or so ago, and I think people have forgotten the impact that had across the region. Many people across the region in senior positions who may be sympathetic to the Palestinians to an extent simply do not trust the Israelis to keep their word. And I think what they feel is that once the hostages and the bodies of the remaining the hostages who died, once those are released into Israeli hands, the danger is, from their perspective, is that Netanyahu and the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, will find some means of going back into the war. And that, I think, is something which is really persisting. It's a view which persists right across the Middle East.
It's hard to see him sticking by this deal, Netanyahu, because if it were to last for any length of time, a ceasefire, some sort of withdrawal to agreed lines that everyone might get some sort of a agreement is maybe too strong a word, but they would acquiesce to it. But then if the ceasefire lasts for a while, Netanyahu ends up before the courts and maybe it's the end of the political line for him. So therefore, it's not in his interest, self-interest, not to be at war with Hamas. And for Trump, if he doesn't get the peace prize, maybe he'll lose interest in the whole affair.
That is a risk, yes. And I think this is what one has to remember. And previous ceasefires have tended to disappear, the long one, of course, in particular. And that was really down to Israeli actions. The issue here, though, of course, is Israeli political timing. There has to be a general election sometime next year, I believe it is. And essentially, Netanyahu really wants to be in a position where he was still very much in charge and has had some degree of success before that election. Otherwise, he is out. And he may well be out before that if it finds there's a sufficient of a peace move to make him liable to the kinds of court cases which he faces. So Netanyahu, in some ways, because of the nature of his coalition, will want this war to continue. But in other ways, he may calculate that it was worth to bring some at least temporary ceasefire to kind of try and win the election. Whether he can is another matter. But given the state of Israeli public opinion, it's very difficult to predict that.
It is extraordinary, though, that individuals like Trump and Netanyahu can be looking to their own self-interest above the lives of all of those on both sides who end up dying in this conflict.
Yes, and I'm afraid that's one of the harsh and very nasty realities of this conflict. It's not limited to this conflict. You find it in many international conflicts, but essentially you see it very clearly here. For Netanyahu, I think in particular, he's a politician for whom his own survival and his own success really comes above everything else. And not all political leaders are like that. But this is certainly true of Netanyahu. And I think this is what we have to see. Behind all of this, there is that calculation which you'll be making almost constantly, I would say.
So, Paul, finally, what is your feeling about the prospects for a ceasefire? I mean, are we looking at very low prospects or are we trying to be optimistic and say maybe a 50-50 chance?
I think realistically, the prospects of a ceasefire in the short term maybe as strong as 50-50. The chances of it lasting more than 3 months, I would think, would be maybe 10%. You just can't say that this is going to be in any sense the end. There are too many things that can go wrong, too many political interests at stake. So I'm afraid I'm still pretty pessimistic overall.
Paul Rogers, Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.